And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton with a look at statewide and local updates. The Glory Hall Homeless Shelter in downtown Juneau closed this week after two people experiencing homelessness tested positive for COVID-19. According to a release from the City and Borough of Juneau, seven others are in quarantine. Glory Hall Director Maria Lovashek says that they learned about the positive test results on Monday.
So we immediately moved everybody out of our night shelter into hotel, and we closed the day facility.
The city tested 75 patrons and staff at the Glory Hall last Friday. All of the results came back negative. Still, the city plans to do another round of testing this Friday. Depending on the results of those tests, Lovashek hopes that the Glory Hall can reopen next week. She says this incident underscores the need for a larger homeless shelter with more space. The Glory Hall has plans to build a new shelter in the Mendenhall Valley and is hoping that the city will fund it.
If we had a bigger building than our existing facility, people could meaningfully isolate from one another, and we could actually ensure safety and compliance with social distancing standards, and we just simply cannot do it in our current facility. It's just simply too small.
The city's emergency warming shelter at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center remains open for overnight sleeping. At Monday's Juneau Assembly meeting, city staff discussed the need to provide day services to the city's homeless population as the weather grows colder. Many of the public facilities where people would normally go during the day are closed or have capacity limits because of the pandemic. The National Park Service has released additional information about a fatal grizzly bear attack in Wrangell St. Elias National Park and Preserve over the weekend. The Park Service identifies the victim as 22-year-old Austin Pfeiffer of Ohio. A Park Service release says Pfeiffer and his hunting partner were on an unguided moose hunt in the remote Cottonwood Creek drainage within the preserve, where permitted sport hunting is allowed. The attack site is about 50 air miles from the eastern interior village of Northway. Park spokesperson Janice Maslin says that the hunters had killed a moose on Saturday and were butchering and packing the meat out to camp on Sunday when they split up.
The partner returned to camp with a load while Pfeiffer prepared the next load. And when Pfeiffer's partner returned to within about 50 yards of the harvest site, he was charged by a bear. And in self-defense, he did shoot in the direction of the bear several times with his sidearm. And when the bear came within about 20 feet of him, it did flinch as if shot, and it then veered and ran off.
Maslin says the partner went to the moose kill site and found Pfeiffer dead from what appeared to have been a surprise attack.
There was no evidence that he was carrying a firearm or deterrent with him at the time, so he was unable to defend himself.
Maslin says it's the first known fatal bear attack in the park and preserve since it was created in 1980. She says the partner called an air service that had flown the men in for the hunt and reported what happened. The partner was flown out, and the Park Service and state wildlife troopers traveled to the site on Monday and recovered Pfeiffer's body, which was taken to the state medical examiner in Anchorage for autopsy. The Park Service says there's no evidence that the bear was still in the area and that no visitors are known to be in the vicinity. Are you fed up with the gridlock in the Alaska legislature? Annoyed when moderate candidates lose to extreme ones in primary elections? A new citizens' initiative promises to solve these problems. The proposal includes measures popular with outside reformers like ranked choice voting and nonpartisan primary elections. But as Nat Herz with Alaska Public Media reports, those proposals have never been combined into one statewide election system, and there's a big fight playing out about whether they'd actually improve Alaska's system of government.
If you want to understand the appeal of ballot measure 2, one place to start is a campaign ad in a recent San Francisco mayoral debate.
I'm Jane Kim.
And I'm Mark Leno.
Mark and I.
San Francisco uses ranked choice voting, one of the proposals included in the Alaska ballot measure. The system asks voters to pick second and third choice candidates in addition to their favorite, and those preferences are counted if no one wins a majority, which in theory makes it less appealing for candidates to go negative, since they might want the second choice votes of their opponent's supporters. That's how you end up with campaign ads like this.
Mark and I are opponents.
But Jane and I agree.
You should pick our next mayor. Vote for me and Mark Leno.
Vote for me and Jane Kim.
Scott Kendall is an Anchorage attorney who's worked for Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski and independent former Governor Bill Walker, and he helped write the initiative. Supporters like Kendall say that more positive campaigning would be just one outcome of their proposal, which they argue would boost transparency, participation, access, and choice in Alaska's elections.
All signs point to much, much higher turnout, much, much voter engagement, much more satisfaction, and winners who the majority of the people support.
Ranked choice voting is one big piece of the initiative. A second would require more disclosure about the sources of cash that flow into Alaska's elections, eliminating what the initiative calls dark money. A third piece would do away with the state's partisan primary election. Instead of parties using separate ballots to choose their own nominees for the general election, all primary candidates would go on the same ballot, and the top four would advance to the general, regardless of party. Critics of the ideas say that Alaska's elections already work just fine, even if it's true that there's some gridlock in the state capital.
If you're saying, hey, Juneau looks broken, government's not working, we're on the wrong track, yes, yes, and yes. The issue is, will this address any of those things? My answer is no, no, and no.
Brett Huber is a former top deputy to Governor Mike Dunleavy, who's running the campaign against the initiative with money from a number of conservative groups. Huber doesn't like that if the initiative passes, candidates could run without any information about their party affiliation. He also argues that ranked choice voting is confusing and that some people's ballots don't end up counting in the final results if they haven't specified a second or third choice. And he says his opponents are relying on buzzwords that obscure the substance of what they're trying to do.
When they talk about closed primaries, it's because that sounds scary. Dark money, closed primaries, right? So we know what the ads are going to say. We're listening to them already. So please, somebody report on what's actually in this bill.
Studies have shown that ranked choice voting on its own is associated with more women and more people of color winning elections. Voters in places with ranked choice elections also have said they're more satisfied with candidates' campaigns and that they've seen less negative campaigning. Researchers have also found that open primaries were tied to California legislators becoming less extreme in their ideology, but open primaries and ranked choice voting have actually never been combined in the same statewide election system, as the initiative proposes to do in Alaska. Researchers say it's really hard to predict just how Alaska's government will transform if the ballot measure passes. Jack Santucci is a professor at Drexel University who's studied election reform, and he says one clue about the possible impacts of the initiative is in who's supporting it.
You don't really know what you're going to get with this reform stuff, but a pretty good guide is the sort of coalition pushing for it. Usually, not always, the reform coalition ends up in power after the reform.
Who's behind the initiative? It's a hard group to characterize. There's the attorney, Kendall, who's worked for centrist politicians like Lisa Murkowski and Bill Walker. One co-chair is former Anchorage Representative Jason Gren, an independent who caucused with Democrats in the legislature, but is also aligned with Alaska's oil industry. Another co-chair is Bruce Botello, a Democrat who worked as attorney general under both a Democratic and a Republican governor. Supporters argue that even if their proposal isn't entirely proven, one compelling reason to vote for it is because of just how badly the current system is functioning, in their view. Here's Kendall.
People like to say, oh, throw the bums out, they're not getting their job done. I think we've built a system engineered to make them fail.
Alaskans will decide whether to take their chances on the initiative on November 3rd. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
The COVID-19 pandemic has cost the Alaska Marine Highway System tens of millions in revenue from lost ridership. That's according to Rob Carpenter, the Department of Transportation's deputy commissioner, speaking Thursday at Southeast Conference.
We've had roughly a $45 million revenue, unrealized revenue impact since this all began. And that was, you know, right away we had to tie ships up. The unfortunate part was we were just getting ships back online from all the mechanical we had.
He's referring to the breakdown of several vessels last winter, including the Matanuska ferry at the beginning of the year. It was the sole mainliner the state had running. Regional service resumed in March, but then came COVID-19.
Villages and communities locked down. They didn't want us to come. We couldn't come. We had to get our mitigation plans figured out. Anyway, we're running now and everything's going great, but we're still, ridership is significantly down and our revenue is significantly impacted for what we had based our budget off of. So that has led into our winter schedule, which is I think at a level no one is happy with, including us, but the service level, but that's what we can afford at this time.
A 9-person Marine Highway Work Group created by Governor Dunleavy is expected to release its recommendations for the fleet's future next week. The task force has already ruled out privatization or any scenario where the state gives away the fleet. Carpenter says DOT awaits its report.